Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland podcast. So originally we were going to do over-unders with goals, which we love to do kind of at the halfway point of the season. But so much happened that I figured we'd switch gears. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Arthur potentially joining Arsenal with Loftus-Cheek, potentially replacing him at Juve. We'll talk a little bit about that Super Cup match between Inter and Juve, because I think there are some really interesting things that happened there. And then the main reason why we're not doing over-unders is I definitely wanted to talk about Rocco Commisso's interview with Financial Times, which was really, really awesome. And we'll give some updates on some recent transfer stories since it's Friday before a long weekend. We have 1,000 names for his game picks, and we'll close it out in a classy fashion with the awesome Richard Hall going around Serie A. But at the top, I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I got to ask you this. Arthur has not been good at Juve, but the news that potentially moving him to Arsenal would come with Loftus-Cheek, a player you're very familiar with, coming in to replace him, had a lot of Juve fans bummed out because it was like, okay, Arthur might have been bad, but this sounds like a potential downgrade. What would you tell a Juve fan that is bummed out by this potential development?
Well, I get it. I definitely get it. I wonder how they would feel if this was the Loftus-Cheek from before the big Achilles injury, when he seemingly broke out under Maurizio Sarri. But hey, that's obviously not the case, and I'm sure many Juve fans, their tune would be different, but that obviously is not the case. Since that Sarri season, of course, he had that big Achilles injury at the end of the season, David, and ever since then, Loftus-Cheek, even though he's at the exact same age as Arthur, both 25, there's a lot more damage on the tires of Loftus-Cheek, because it wasn't just that Achilles injury that has kind of stained the career so far of Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Injuries have been the name of the game for him all throughout his young career. He's been around for a long time because he was always one of those super talented Cobham kids, you would say, that was just in the spotlight a lot earlier than most youngsters are. In fact, I mean, I call him the pioneer of Chelsea youth. He was in those Mourinho teams. He never really got a fair shot, but he was kind of the guy trying to pave the way for the Mason Mounts and the Reece Jameses and everybody who followed. But injuries have always been with him. Honestly, you can say on one hand, maybe he's never fully cracked through at Chelsea, because up until Lampard, they didn't have managers that wanted to play youth. But still, even if they did, the injuries have been with Loftus-Cheek. So that Sarri season was super exciting because it looked like, wow, okay, he's getting a handle on the injuries. He was pretty durable that season. He wasn't just doing these powerful midfield surging runs, but he was scoring. He was being clinical. He was becoming a output number eight, somebody who actually could get goals and assists from the number eight position in the midfield. But yeah, last season he goes on loan to Fulham, and it was more just about kind of regaining his fitness because he hasn't been the same since the Sarri season, and he was poor, but he didn't get injured. And then this season under Tuchel, he's had a couple instances where he looked like the old Loftus-Cheek with the powerful midfield surging runs, and he hasn't had really a big injury issue. So that is the good news for Juve fans if you are to get Loftus-Cheek. Like, as of right now, there hasn't been anything concerning or too concerning on the injury front since a couple seasons ago, since that Achilles injury. But I was actually just speaking about it the other day on my podcast, so I'll share it with you, is he still looks like a guy that is a bit tentative in his mind. So that season under Sarri, he actually wanted to go for a goal. Now we're just seeing the surging midfield runs, but we're not really seeing anything in the final third. He's either taking too long or he's just not shooting at all. So I don't know if a change of scenery could maybe make him almost feel his confidence again, because he'd want to prove to a fan base. And David, you say that Juve fans are kind of rolling their eyes at the idea of Loftus-Cheek. I mean, he'll respond to that one of two ways. And I guess that's kind of an easy way to get out of this answer. But he could respond to that in terms of just tucking his tail and being like, wow, they have no confidence in me already. Well, I don't have confidence in myself. But I don't know. I like his character. And he might almost be at the point where he thinks, I have nothing to lose here. So maybe he will almost use that as a prove me moment. And let me just say this to a Juve fan. If you're against the idea of Loftus-Cheek, if he uses it as a prove me moment, you could get a really nice player. Like, you could get a really nice player. And I'm going to say this now. The ceiling of Loftus-Cheek is better than Arthur. It is better. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not demeaning or poo-pooing Arthur. Okay? I'm not at all. Nice midfielder. Like you said, David, hasn't really done that well for Juve. But still, nice midfielder. Can do a little bit of everything in the midfield. But Loftus-Cheek is a much more special talent. And this is not my Cobham bias, I promise you. I promise you, because I am okay with letting go of Loftus-Cheek. But if he can stay healthy and just find that final third confidence again, you're getting somebody who's going to impact games way more than Arthur. So I was literally just saying the other day, I'm wondering what's going to happen here with Loftus-Cheek, because as much as he belongs at Chelsea from a sentimentality point of view, it doesn't feel like he'll really have the opportunity to settle. He's just behind so many guys on the depth chart. And as much as Tuchel is willing to give anyone time if they're earning it, it just doesn't feel like Loftus-Cheek really fits, because he's not really a front three player in this formation under Tuchel, but he's not really a pivot player, especially when you have Kovacic and Jorginho and Conte fit. And you could even argue Saul is maybe more of a logical fit at the moment in the pivot as well. Loftus-Cheek can play the pivot. And then when he's had good performances this season, it's been in the pivot, but he's probably best in a three-man midfield. I actually could see him fitting into the way Juve play these days. But it's a lot of ifs, isn't it? It is a lot of ifs. Like, he's got to find it the is. Confidence. So he has to use the Juve fan base doubting him as a driving point, which he very well could. I will say I do like his mentality. Like, he's someone who loves football. So I don't think he's going to tuck his tail. And you know what, David? Last point here. Who's his friend over at Roma? Who's his friend over at AC Milan? He might honestly find a sense of comfort being in Italy, knowing Tammy Abraham is succeeding and, you know, he paved the way for Tammy, and knowing that Fikayo Tomori is succeeding and he paved the way for Tomori. So, you know, I actually would be very keen to see this. Maybe a Juve fan wouldn't, but why not? Because I'm telling you, there's still a big ceiling there if he can stay fit and find his confidence again. Two big ifs, but I don't know. From the outside looking in, and I'm not trying to demean Arthur again, I think I would do it if I was Juve. I really do. Because I just think you're at a point where you're not going to be that Juve of old with one move anyway, if you know what I mean. And although, yes, maybe this could be a bad trade-off, I don't think it's going to make or break you, because I think you're already further away from what you want to achieve regardless. So I actually think Loftus-Cheek hitting his ceiling is going to get you a lot closer to where you need to be again than maybe the realistic viewpoint for someone like Arthur. So I would be up for it, actually, if I was a Juve fan. If I've only convinced one Juve fan, it's worth it. It's worth it. All right, so David, after that long spiel, do you think Arthur to Arsenal, you know, what do you think of that from your vantage point? Obviously, you are seeing Arthur more. And, you know, what would he bring to the table?
Wow. First of all, I had no idea Loftus-Cheek was already 25. That really blew me away. And you're right. I remember when there's Sarri, and it's no coincidence that with Sarri was at Lazio, that was one of the first players he tried to bring on there. So very interesting there. And look, what I would tell a Juve fan on top of that is, if the alternative is move R4 and then go sign Witzel, this is a much better move, because these older veteran players on high salaries is really what's been killing Juve. And if you take a flyer on a young player, to me, that is a better move. And you're right. Look at what Tomori and Tammy, how coming to Serie A has helped them. From the Arthur perspective, it does look like this is progressing very rapidly. I always thought it was going to be very hard for Juve to move him because of his amortized value remaining, and also his wages are fairly high for the production you're getting. But, you know, Juve is open to moving him on loan and then seeing what happens. Arthur has already agreed to terms with Arsenal, so that's a big hurdle also with the wages. I think Arthur is pretty motivated to leave Juve. So from Arsenal's perspective, I have to say he probably is a better fit there than at Juve. He always kind of felt like an awkward fit at Juve. Brazilian players in general have not really been that comfortable at Juve. There have been exceptions. Of course, I remember Julio Cesar in the 90s, and also the style of play that Arsenal play, maybe not as defensive as Allegri, and I think I'm probably being generous here. So to me, it probably makes sense. I can already tell that there's going to be, if this move happens, and this is going to be in a lot of ways a sale in disguise, because I think once a player like Arthur starts getting loaned out, it's very rare that those players come back to the club. Like, you know, either you sell them outright or you run out the contract. We've seen that Felipe Melo, Douglas Costa, two Brazilian players being in that boat at Juve. But I can already know there's going to be a lot of regrets from Juve fans on how this worked out. Is this going to be really warranted? That is hard for me to say. I think, you know, there is this vision, and we have seen it at times, of Locatelli and Arthur playing together. And I'm going to say especially the second half against Roma, where you're like, huh, this is pretty intriguing. This double playmaker thing, kind of similar a little bit to how Italy was doing at the Euro, and is the way Locatelli was playing at Sassuolo with Maxime Lopez. So I could see a lot of regrets for that. But at the same time, I would say that Arthur was given plenty of chances, and most of his best passes at Juve have been to opponents. I think that's what people are going to mainly remember about him. But look, he is a guy who plays pretty regularly for Brazil. He's not old. It's kind of a bummer. Like Juve, I thought in the Pjanic deal, it made sense. You were getting the younger player, and I thought Pjanic was overrated at Juve to begin with. But that move, you know, that huge swap, more for financial reasons, kind of in a way it had bad karma, because it was clearly a move mainly for financial reasons. It was like inflating the figures to make it work. So there was kind of some bad karma with that deal. So maybe Arthur goes to a new place, a different kind of style of play. It wouldn't surprise me at all that it works out, and then there'll be a lot of regrets for Juve fans. But then what I would tell those Juve fans is there's no guarantee Arthur was ever going to do this at Juve. And again, I repeat, if the alternative is move Arthur and then go get Witzel, who's older on big wages, to me, it made much more sense to try to take a flyer on Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah, very keen to see how this plays out. So, David, you shared something with me that I thought was super, super cool. I saw Chiellini congratulating Inter for winning the Super Cup. So when obviously they were celebrating, Chiellini right there on the touchline applauding. I mean, who does that, by the way? That is just absolutely incredible, especially in the fashion they lose, that he still has the class to be there applauding. But just overall, what were some of your takeaways of all of that?
So listen, I know I've been very harsh on Juve, and look, I remind people, I did grow up a Juve fan with a Platini. I watched Del Piero at Juve. I have a lot of affection for the club, but I also, you know, I try to be fair to everyone, and Juve has been in a rut for a while, and a lot of that rut is self-imposed. And, you know, I'm going to point it out. And, you know, just as we pointed out how well they were doing for years at the beginning of this pod. But look, I'm going to tell you that I'm a huge Chiellini fan. And this kind of is going to tie into what we talk about Commisso again. But one of the themes that I've been trying to talk a lot about on the podcast is the fact that we hold people we don't like to much higher standards than people that we do like. And I totally get why so many people don't like Chiellini. Key Juve player. Juve is the most loved team in Italy, but also the most hated team in Italy. Chiellini is a very physical player. At times, he'll do what it takes to win. Does sometimes go into dirty territory, maybe. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that will say, Dave, you're being overly, nice to him. Fair. So long and short of it, I totally get why people don't like Chiellini. But at the same time, he really is a pretty remarkable guy. I follow athletes in a lot of different sports. I have to tell you, as a person, there are very few that I think compare to Chiellini. And I think people saw it with the way he was applauding Inter after they won the cup. As you mentioned, Juve lost really, really in dramatic fashion. You had the opposite display with Chiellini, with Bonucci on the sideline. And, you know, Chiellini is the guy who brought on my radar the Insuperabili, which is the nonprofit we support with the pod, which they really do outstanding work. I think people saw at the Euro, you know, he's a pretty remarkable guy. So I really ride for Chiellini. Again, I get why people don't like him. But what I will say, the last thing on Chiellini before I talk a little bit more about the game, is I've said it time and time again, Juve is going to miss Chiellini more than they did when Del Piero and Buffon left, which doesn't mean Chiellini is as good a player as Del Piero, who is an absolute all-time Juve player, one of the most iconic players the club has ever had. Buffon, one of the greatest keepers of all time. Chiellini is not quite at that level, but Juve is in a much different situation than when either of those players left. When Del Piero left, they still had Buffon, they still had Chiellini, they had the BBC, they had Marchisio, they had Vidal, maybe not great leader in a certain sense, but leader in another way. But now, who does Juve have? You're left with Bonucci with the antics that we saw on the sidelines. So I think people, there's going to be even more appreciation for Chiellini after the fact, and someone that I have the utmost respect for. And again, I would challenge anyone who really does not like Chiellini to think about the concept that we hold people we don't like to much higher standards. I know I do. I'm fully aware of this. But about the game, the other thing that stood out to me is this in a lot of ways felt like a passing of the torch. Like, Juve lost in pazza Inter fashion. How many times did we see Juve beat Inter kind of in a similar fashion? Higuain seemed to have a knack for doing this. Juve feel like they have become pazza Inter, and Inter are becoming the way Juve was. We're also seeing it on the transfer market. Juve would buy a lot of players in Serie A, trying to weaken the teams around them. And it seems that that's a concept that Inter is trying to do as well. You know, Inter is giving Marotta, Ausilio, their two main directors, a three-year extension. That's a pretty strong statement. You think of all the extensions Inter have done since Lukaku sale, and, you know, they extended Barella, Bastoni, Brozovic is next. They extend their directors. Like, to me, short of, you know, a collapse of the ownership, which is certainly very possible, I have a hard time. I think Inter's really opening a cycle, and I think they are really, is it going to be as long as Juve's? That's very hard to tell. And if you look at history, odds are it's nowhere going to be nowhere near as long, but I could see Inter dominating in the next few years. And I think we really saw in that match that there is something about them. I thought Juve actually played pretty well there, but a very, very impressive win for them. You know, I'm curious to see how they do in this match against Atalanta coming this weekend after this match. We'll hear Thousand Names' prediction on this in a second. But I thought that was a very impressive win for Inter, but then also for Juve fans, I would say, that game following the win against Roma could either be like a really nice getting back on track, or it could be a pretty devastating blow. I will say your boy Alessandro after that is really persona non grata with Juve fans. So, a very interesting game. And what I will say is I love that this Super Cup match was just a reflection of how exciting Serie A has been. So if you want to focus on all the big stars leaving, if you don't like Serie A, you can look at it that way. Or if you like Serie A, you could say, you know what, it doesn't make a difference really who the players are, because the product, the game is so exciting and fun that I'm enjoying it just as much. And that's my perspective. But it's, again, because I like the league.
Yeah, no comment on Alexandro. It is what it is. I don't talk about him anymore, so I think that should be a perfectly good admission there from myself. All right, so David, last little thing here in this top segment. What did you make of Comiso's interview with the Financial Times?
Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts, and this is why we're pushing back the over-unders to next week. Wow. First of all, I have to say Murad Ahmed, who was the writer, and he's like in charge of sports of Financial Times. Obviously, he's great at what he does. I thought he did a magnificent job. You know, often Napoli Outsider and I are chatting via message on where journalism is going. This was a great piece of journalism. So it's a long article, but very worth it. It delivers really well. It has a great sense of narrative. A lot of the things that we've talked about on the podcast, people that follow Comiso, it basically hit all the points that Comiso has made on Italian football in a very engaging way. You learn a little bit more about him. Just as a piece of journalism narrative, even if you knew, even if you don't care anything at all about Fiorentina, Serie A, Comiso, it's just a fascinating article. So incredibly well done, Murad Ahmed. Congratulations. I love the article. So a couple of themes on there. Again, we go back to if you like someone, you're going to hold them to a higher standard. If you don't, you're going to bash them at any chance that you have. I have to say I've made a 180 on Comiso. It kind of started with how he handled the Gattuso thing. I think he's doing a lot of things right. So the other thing that we hold people we don't like to higher standards is nobody likes an outsider criticizing you, right? So Alex, like if it's a Chelsea fan is talking about Chelsea is one thing. If a Man United or a fan of another team talks, it's a little bit different. And the way it was received in Italy, I am not surprised this interview with Rocco Comiso was not received well in Italy. So what did Comiso say? He complained about the awful stadium in Florence. He says it's a piece of crap. You know, I need to make more revenues. Fans of every team in Italy, unless it's Juve or Udinese or Atalanta or Brennau Cagliari, would be like, you know what? Yeah, we need a better stadium. It's ridiculous that bureaucracy makes it so hard to do. So if an Italian president says it or the president of your club, it's fine. But if Rocco says it, it's like, oh, he's making Italian football look bad. I don't know if I agree with holding him that way. He talked a lot about the financial things and how he felt that, you know, Juve and Inter, you know, kind of operate in maybe a little bit different ways. Is there maybe something to it? Potentially. Yeah, no doubt about it. He complained a ton about agent fees, saying he doesn't understand why an agent should make so much money on a transfer. He says he doesn't understand why the agent should be paid by both teams. And then, you know, he also made the point that, you know, Vlahovic should have some gratitude to Fiorentina and he shouldn't just pick up and leave and make it hard for Fiorentina to make money off him. Comiso pointed out that Vlahovic, you know, value on the transfer market, 70 million, a striker of his ability does sound about right. That's pretty much all of Fiorentina's revenues for a year. So, and they are basically saying, Vlahovic, like, you have to do something. You have to state and kind of work with us. I think these are all pretty reasonable things. And my reaction to Comiso, and he says, look, I'm spending a lot of my own money. He dumped 40 million into creating the training facility for Fiorentina. And you read the story of how the cost went up by 20 million euros. All the stuff you read about Italy, perfectly explained there. And if you're an Italian person, I'm sure you can relate to that. But, you know, Comiso's making fun of your country. So all of a sudden, you don't like it. But Comiso has really put his money where his mouth is. I don't think anyone can deny that. My last takeaway is it felt a little bit like Comiso's descent in Italian football, a little bit like Alice in Wonderland or The Matrix, like going into this whole new world that you think you understand a little bit, but not quite. Like you're going down into like bureaucracy hell. So I'm not going to say that Comiso was naive because, look, he's a guy, he's a self-made man that made a ton of money. I really respect that about him, but I think he really underestimated how tough it was going to be in Italy. And I think he pretty much conceded that in the interview. So I really encourage everyone to check out this article. I posted it on my Twitter page, a lot of really interesting things there. And I think it's very hard to argue against a lot of the things that he's saying. Now, is he saying it in a pretty colorful way? No doubt about it, but definitely very interesting. And I will tell you, a lot of the complaints that we have, that people have about Italian football, Comiso is really trying to do something about it. So I think he does deserve a little bit of respect for that.
Mm. Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, David. Well, let's continue here with a different segment now, but we're talking about something that is very interesting. That's why I say continue. And man, that Fiorentina Super Cup game the other day was really all over the place. And when we speak about Fiorentina, we usually speak about maybe multiple people, but certainly Vlahovic. So do you think Vlahovic will be sold in January?
Yeah, man, he had a great goal, Coppa Italia with Napoli, really. I mean, like, Vlahovic, really, really good. So I have to say, this is the first time that I actually do think there is a chance that Fiorentina sells him in January. And I do think that Comiso interviews part of that. And then Barone, who is Comiso's right-hand man, publicly told Vlahovic, you should make a public statement and say what your intentions are and move it along. I think Fiorentina now would really like to sell Vlahovic in January. I think their thinking is they can get a better return for him now than in the summer when he'll have just 1 year left on his contract. So, and I have to say, and then they brought in Piontek, who scored in his first game in the Coppa Italia. And we were like, oh, is he a backup? Maybe he is the guy who's going to get the first crack at trying to replace Vlahovic in the short term. So I actually do think my opinion has changed. I think Vlahovic would prefer to finish the season because in the summer, you know, it's easier to get more teams to compete and whatnot. Now, is Arsenal going to get him? We'll see. It seems like Vlahovic was hoping for maybe something a little bit different. But we'll see. I think Fiorentina would like to sell him in January, while I think Vlahovic would want to wait for the summer. But then we get to this very interesting point. Does Vlahovic owe anything at all to Fiorentina for developing him? So this is definitely one to watch. This should be a fascinating story the rest of the window.
Hmm. Absolutely. And it's one that is like in all circles, Vlahovic and his future. All right. So let's move on to this. What are the odds that Milan sign Eric Bailly from Manchester United?
I think yesterday with the injury to Tomori, and we all wish Tomori the best and hope it's nothing serious. I think it's giving Milan more urgency on the transfer market. Because look at it this way. I think the way Gabbia and Kalulu were playing as starting center backs told Milan, maybe we don't have to go out and rush to get a replacement for Kier, but now you also have Tomori out. So, yeah, I think there's a decent chance this deal will happen. They're also looking at Diallo on PSG. You know, what's really interesting is I've been thinking a lot about these loan deals. And look, there are obviously exceptions. There are times where clubs absolutely are sending out players on loan to develop them. But it seems to me like in a lot of cases, now loan deals are becoming, let me find a team that's willing to pay the salary of this player. Hopefully the whole thing, but we'll take even if you pay a little bit of it. Like think of how many players Man United has sent to Serie A on loan in recent years. Dalot, Smalling. And, you know, sometimes they stay. So to me, you look Juve with Arthur, they really want someone else to pay his salary. So to me, this is also really an illustration of how much football has changed in recent years and how in a lot of ways it's becoming much more about finances than sporting reasons. It's not so much, oh, let me send this youngster on loan so he can get experience. Let me try to find the team that maybe runs the same system as ours. I feel like in a lot of ways, those conversations with loans, and they do happen at times, but that's not what that business has become. And I think that perfectly illustrates how much football has changed in recent years.
Mm. Okay. All right, David, last one for this segment. What would be more of a villain move for Inter, signing Frank Kessie or Dybala on a Bosman?
I know a lot of people are going to say, of course it's Dybala. Bigger name, Juve Inter rivalry, Marotta sneaking one more out of Juve. But I would say maybe in the short term it would be Dybala, but potentially in the long term, Frank Kessié. And I say that because Frank Kessié is 3 years younger. He does stay. He's more durable than Dybala, at least right now. So maybe in the short term, I think it would absolutely make a bigger splash for Inter to sign Dybala on a Bosman than Kessié. But maybe long term, it would hurt more. Now, this is very interesting because I wanted to talk a little bit about Dybala. You know, we talked a lot on the podcast on, to me, it was absolute folly that Juve was offering Dybala a five-year deal at huge money. I like Dybala, big fan of his, one of my favorite players to see in person. But I was like, who in the world is Juve competing against that they have to offer him a five-year deal? And now all of a sudden that Juve even publicly have said, we're taking our time to decide what to do with Dybala. And I think that has a lot to do with seeing where they are in the standings with the Champions League. And then maybe Juve is also thinking, oh, crap, Chiesa's also out. How much does this impact our chances of making it to the Champions League? Because without those revenues, Juve is already in very tough financial spot. You take away those revenues from the Champions League, that makes it even more of a gamble to sign Dybala. So, to me, this whole thing of these reports of the interest on Inter is really a disruption tactic, like a perfect way for Marotta to make life miserable for Juve. And guess what? That's part of the job. And if Juve was doing it to Inter, Juve fans would be cheering it on. So look, I think Dybala's camp must love this news of, you know, this reported interest from Inter, because it definitely helps their cause to get better terms from Juve. So we'll see what happens. Look, Juve losing Dybala as an asset for nothing would be a very tough blow. But also what would be a very tough blow is having Dybala on a huge salary on your payroll if he's not able to play. So I think Juve's giving themselves a little bit more time, A, to see how the race in the Champions League develops, and then to see if Dybala can get a few games in without getting injured. So I will say, media-wise, it would be more of a villain move for Inter to sign Dybala. But I think maybe on the pitch, it would be more long-term, the Frank Kessié. Okay, let's get to our main man, Thousand Names, now. Always appreciate his picks. The game on Sunday, I got to say, I'm really, really looking forward to. So we're going to start with that one. Atalanta hosting Inter. Thousand Names has Inter winning 3-0, goals by Bastoni, Barella, Dzeko. He does say Lautaro's going to miss a penalty and Pasalic is going to get a red card. He says Limone Inzaghi is going to raise the Super Cup in the face of Gasperini, who is a Juve fan, called him a gobbo, which Gasperini is. And he says the Dea is going to be destroyed by the Inter's beautiful style of play. In Italian, Atalanta Inter 0-3. Bastoni, Barella, Dzeko, Lautaro sbaglia rigore, espulso Pasalic, Limone alza la Supercoppa in faccia al gobbo di Gasperini, Dea distrutta dal bel gioco. I'm going to go against the grain. Atalanta usually does show a lot of respect to Inter, curiously, especially against Conte. So I'm curious if Gasperini, knowing that Simone Inzaghi does play a more offensive style, is going to do the usual Atalanta thing. But I'm going to go totally against Graham, and I'm going to say these two teams featuring the two best attacks in Serie A finishes 0-0. Next up, the Lotito Derby. Lazio traveling to southern Italy to face Salernitana. 1,000 has Lazio winning 5-0. He has goals by Pedro, Luis Alberto, and a hat trick by Felipe Anderson. Don't bet that, kids. I don't think that one's coming through. And he says Strakosha is going to save a penalty and that Lotito is going to command this game and that Yervolino is just a front. That's the new owner for Sassuolo. And he says Sarri can only win these easy matches that are basically handed to him. In Italian, Salernitana Lazio 0-5, Pedro Luis Alberto, tripletta Felipe Anderson, Strakosha para rigore, comanda Lotito, Yervolino suo prestanome, Sarri vince solo le partite accomodate. Fidatevi, man. Lazio's been a big disappointment for me. I think I'm going to have Lazio winning. I'll have them winning 2-0. I'll give a goal to Luis Alberto and Milinkovic-Savic. Final match, Bologna Napoli traveling to Emilia-Romagna to face Bologna. Goals by Fabian Ruiz and Romani for Fouls and Name. And he says Spalletti is going to move forward with a gift from Sinisa after the humiliation in the Coppa Italia. And Nino D'Angelo, famous singer from Naples, going to make Gianni Morandi cry. Gianni Morandi is the famous singer from Bologna. Thank you, Fouls and Names, for giving us a little sprinkle, a little bit of Italian culture in your predictions. Appreciate it. In Italian, Bologna, Napoli 0-2, Fabian Romani, Spalletti avanti coi regali di Sinisa dopo l'umiliazione di Coppa Italia. Nino D'Angelo fa piangere Gianni Morandi. I'll go win for Napoli, but just 1-0, and I'll give a goal to Mertens, who is now also linked to Toronto. Before we get to our dear friend Richard Hall, I hope you guys all enjoyed that wonderful interview to finish the show. We'll do a part of the show for our patrons. If you enjoyed listening to this show today, consider becoming a patron. You'll get an episode on Tuesday. You'll get articles. You'll get to ask us questions. You'll get a monthly special with Napoli Outsider, a lot of great content. You can support the podcast that way. Another way you can support the pod is tweet links to our show, tell your friends about them, can leave us a review. You know, I've definitely invested time and money into improving the audio at my end. The pod's becoming better in that sense. If you enjoy listening to us, please leave us a rating. You can do it on iTunes. I see Spotify now has ratings. If you can give us 5 stars there, it would be really appreciated. And thank you so much for listening to the pod and supporting us. Oh, I'm so excited to welcome our next guest. We were chatting right before I hit the record button, our dear friend Richard Hall, who's been a constant guest since we started the pod over 4 years ago. And we've seen Richard's rise over the years. You know, when we started doing this pod, Richard was running the Excellent Gentleman Ultra site, still going on fantastic. He was one of the head writers at Football Italia. And recently, Richard's been working with Fiorentina, writing awesome articles for them. And now is the host, one of the hosts of the English language podcast for Inter, the official one. So Richard's really done an unbelievable job, and I'm really happy to welcome him today. We're going to go around Serie A, and at the end, we'll learn a little bit more about the Interpod. So, Richard, my dear friend, always a pleasure to welcome you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, you're too kind with your opening words. You never know what the luck has to play in all of this, but still, it's not doing too badly. But I can't believe it's been 4 years. Where's that gone?
I know. Well, listen, you know, luck goes to people too sometimes that treat people well, are respectful, work hard, and you do all those things. So I'm thrilled for you. But enough about us. Let's talk football. We're recording this Thursday morning, the day after that unbelievable Super Cup match. So let's start from here. Obviously, since you are not just that one of the hosts of the Inter pod, you are a big Inter fan. I'm sure you really enjoyed this game. So aside from the thrilling ending, what stood out to you about this game?
It's interesting. I don't want to, just because of, you know, obviously an Inter fan and doing the Inter pod, I don't want to come across at all with this, because I'm trying to take a very managed approach. And I just read an article just a moment ago about this. And for me, it's interesting because you know, I'm very sympathetic to Juventus's situation at the moment, and the changes that they're going through, the identity crisis. But, you know, there's a lot going on there. It's a very difficult job for Max Allegri. I actually think that the way they came out against Roma, one of the best games I've seen this season, and they battled extremely hard against Inter. Now, for me, the interesting thing about this game was it does feel like a changing of the guard a little bit. You could say that that happened last season, but I don't agree with that, because obviously Inter win the Scudetto, but then they lose Hakimi, Romelu Lukaku, and of course Antonio Conte. That's problematic. And so when Juventus get Allegri back, it's still questionable. Inter have done better under Inzaghi. A lot of the players have been talking about the fact of they're allowed to express themselves more, and I think it shows. Inter, I think, have got the strongest squad in depth now, especially when you've got people like Dumfries, especially, and, you know, like Claire really coming to the fore and starting to perform. So for me, it did feel that Inter, you know, I mean, whilst it was a last gasp winner, I think that the reason it was, that's credit to Juventus. But when you look at the statistics, you know, they had 23 shots to 8 of Juve's, double the amount of passes nearly and 63% of the possession. Inter could have put this to bed a lot earlier if it wasn't for the resilience of Juventus in that situation. So for me, the one thing that stood out was the hunger for it. You're right, with the Interpod, I'm very lucky to talk to a player or two here. We talked to Mattia Darmian before the game, and he was talking very much about the fact that this really does feel like it needs to be a statement win for Simone Inzaghi to get that first trophy. And I think what stood out is Inter were hungry. The way they chased the ball down when high up the field was phenomenal. But yeah, so that was probably the hunger and the want and the willingness of this team to take it onto the next level and to say to people, look, you've got to challenge us now. And to do that against Juventus, who, even though they've got issues, are still a ridiculously strong squad and strong mentality as well, made it feel like a statement win. So that was really encouraging. Critically, got to be more clinical. But that hopefully will come. So yeah, it was an interesting game. I mean, it was a dramatic game. But I would say overall, whilst it was dominant, it wasn't emphatic. And I think that's credit to Juventus.
Yeah, I think you said a lot of interesting things there, but I'll pick up and talk a little bit more about a changing of the guard, which I couldn't agree more because, yeah, last season Inter won the Scudetto, but then we felt that when Conte, Hakimi, Lukaku left, the sky was falling. I have to say, probably until the day Ronaldo left Juve, a lot of people thought, oh, maybe Juve are the favorite for the Scudetto, and that totally changed. And look, when I watched that match yesterday, if you're a Juve fan, you could say, well, you know, this is the worst Juve that we've had in 10 years, and Inter, it had to come to the last minute, a gift by Alessandro for them to beat us. So that would be one way of looking at it. The other way to look at it is I think maybe Juve in some ways hasn't hit rock bottom yet. We have to see if they don't make the Champions League. It could be pretty dramatic with what they can do financially or not. And Inter, on the other hand, like, we thought things after Conte would leave, things would get worse. And you can make a very strong case that Inter is even doing better this season. So do you see the gap between Juve and Inter continue to widen in the near future?
Yes, I think so. But when for the near future, maybe long term, probably not. Because the Juventus is still Juventus and will always, you know, be able to form competitive teams. I always look to history. You have to look to history to see that. And, you know, Juventus will never disappear. You know, it's going to be, I hate the word transition, but there's going to have to be changes. I was speaking to Emmett Gates, the editor of the Gentleman Ultra, this morning about the game. One thing he said, not me, he said, well, look at it. How many players do you think in that Juventus side that lined up tonight against Inter would get in the Inter squad? And I looked at it, normally, you know, that's always going to be 70-30 normally when I've had that question over the last 10 years, if not more. But last night it was really questionable. It actually made me look at it. And I think Inter, what they've got is strength in depth, and like the fact that in extra time you can take off Dzeko and Martinez and bring on the likes of Correa and Alexis. You know, all over the pitch, they're covered. So for me, there's two things. One, the strength in depth that Inter have, but two, Inter have an identity that was formed under Conte and has been now, it's almost like, you know, how can I put it? Conte bought the sports car and now Inzaghi's letting them drive it themselves. You know, it's fantastic and to see the players express themselves more. So for that, there is one big other thing as well. I think Beppe Marotta is massive. I think in the transfer windows, what he's doing, you see the likes of the weaknesses we have in the squad, like with Handanovic, and now Onana's coming in. You just slowly, gradually, cleverly, he's replacing players. So I think that with that Inter now further on in the project, whereas I think with Juventus, when I look at the team, I think there's players like Ramsey, Rabiot, you know, what's going to happen with Dybala? There's so many questions of how Juventus are playing. And I think that Inter are almost more Juventus-like at the moment, because Juventus teams in history for me, even when you go back into the 90s, they may not have had the best players, but they always worked together. They had an identity. They knew what they were doing. They might win ugly, but they won. And I'm just struggling to see. I think Allegri is the right person for me. I think he will do it. But it's interesting to see what the next couple of transfer windows are going to be like and what direction Juventus want to take. Do they still want to be this super club that play magnificent football? Or will you revert to what you're good at and go back to the traditional way?
Very well said. Very well said. I enjoyed that perspective. Okay, so let's talk the short term. Let's talk this season. Before we get to this exciting Atalanta-Inter match, man, there's every time you turn around, there's a great game coming. But let me ask you, in general, when you look at the league, which team do you think is best equipped to try to keep up with Inter the rest of the way in Serie A?
I'd like to say Napoli, because when they're on form, there's few teams I enjoy watching as much as Napoli. Again, 1-11 is fantastic, but again, you know, you look beyond that and you are scratching around a little bit as well. You know, obviously they've been hampered with the injury to Osimhen in previous weeks. I look at that team and I think, yeah, they play good football. They don't seem to fear teams, but then they do just have this massive drop off. So it's quite difficult to call. And then obviously, you know, we've got to look at Milan, because they are, I think what they are doing for the sum of their parts is incredible. You know, every time I look at the team, you know, there's no, you take Zlatan out of that because he's a special player, but realistically, you look through the rest of that team, there's not, even when you look at the players last season, like Theo Hernandez, who was a standout player, has had issues this season, and yet they've come around and made up, they've managed to get through it. You know, it's a very unified team, a very unified squad. I really enjoy what Pioli does. Again, I still think if you scratch the surface of that after the 1-11, probably got a little bit more maybe than Napoli. But I would say that Napoli are probably the better team, but I think Milan have got the more chance to be more consistent.
I couldn't agree more. That's exactly how I would put it as well. So let's talk a little bit about this great Atalanta-Inter match. I figured too we can touch upon Atalanta. Yesterday, Muriel put on another show for them. You know, this is a very interesting game for me, and for a couple of reasons. A, I'm curious, you know, Inter players, how they're going to respond after this dramatic win. It could be a letdown or it could elevate them even more. I think Atalanta in recent years, when they play Inter, have shown them a lot of respect, in the sense that Gasperini changes a little bit his plan. It isn't full-on attack. I wonder if that changes more with Inzaghi's approach being different than Conte. So those are kind of the things I'm looking at this game. What do you look forward to most when Inter and Atalanta face each other on Sunday?
I also don't look forward to much when we play Atalanta. because, you know, obviously, like you say, Gasperini seems to have this grudge against Inter, which is absolutely fine, because he didn't really get given any time at all, you know, when he was there. And it's always difficult to go to Bergamo. I mean, they're a squad that, you know, I mean, you look at the game against Venezia, and they absolutely dominated that. I'll say this all the time about Atalanta, and this is why I think they're such a good squad. You know, you look last night, and you look like Katabo was brilliant last night. You've got Luis Muriel, but then you can take, for me, Atalanta. I know this is a really big statement, but when Ilicic isn't in the squad, I mean, obviously we know that Gomez is now gone. I actually think they're a better squad, because in some respects they were just edging towards relying on players. And for me, Atalanta have never done that in the recent years. You know, you could take Musso out and you could replace him. You could take Muriel and replace him. You could take, I don't know, Demiral out and replace him. And Atalanta still work. They're just this machine that just can, every player knows his job. Every player comes in and it doesn't seem to matter. And that's what makes them dangerous for me, because you just don't know who's going to line up. And you think, you know, of course, players like Pessina are fantastic and can really do a job. But I think that because they're so interchangeable, it makes them unpredictable. And I think that's a problem. I think that they also are potentially the only team I can think that could probably outfight Inter. When we're talking about the way that Inter got the ball back in Juve's half earlier on, Atalanta are very similar. And ironically, sometimes when you play Atalanta, maybe that more Conte stroke rigidity might be better. So I'm really interested to see if Inzaghi is going to let them play with the same fluidity, or if he's going to tighten things up just a little bit. Sorry, did I say Conte? Sure. Inzaghi.
Let's talk a little bit about Milan, and I think they've been very impressive. And what stood out to me is, you know, the first time they played Venezia, they could barely beat them. I thought they put on a very good performance last weekend. So I want to ask you this. What has surprised you more at Milan? Leao's improvement, Tonali's improvement,
or how well they've done without Donnarumma?
It's a difficult question because, look, Mike Maignan has been brilliant. You would have thought that Donnarumma would have left a ridiculously big hole there because he's such a quality goalkeeper, and there's no denying that. In some respects, it's nice for Milan not to have that hassle about him going all the time. They can settle now. They've got a goalkeeper, you know, at 26 years old, contract till 2026. They can relax. But what's interesting is obviously he's been injured. Tatasarano is a difficult keeper because you never know. It's almost like you get 80% security, 10%, you know, he looks like he's not confident, and then 10% disaster. But he did well enough, you know, and at 35, he's been okay. So that's, I'm impressed with that, the way they've dealt with the Donnarumma departure. Look, you know, for me, he's just coming on and on and on. I think that that's a player that will end up central, you know, forming that team around for years to come. At 21, to be playing with that intelligence and maturity is ridiculous. But for me, it's Rafael Leão. You watched him just run into corners. You know, he always had the speed, he always had the directness, but he was just running for the sake of running at some points. And it didn't produce itself. Now, I'm not comparing, I want your listeners to know, I am not comparing him to Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm comparing when Ronaldo first came onto the scene. He tried the tricks and the flicks, and he just ran into corners as well. And then he got more tactically astute and became the player he is. Now, he's not that player, but what he is doing, he's stopping, he's thinking, the runs he makes are purposeful now. You know, he's showing that he's got goals in him. And at 22, again, he's showing a level of maturity. So I would say Rafael Leão, but all three that you mentioned are good choices because they've all been impressive.
Yeah, without a doubt. So let's look at a opposite side of the spectrum. It's been rough for Roma since we came back from the break. That loss to Juve was very rough. What do you make of Roma's struggles recently? Do you think they can maybe turn the corner with a good January window? Or should Roma fans be pretty concerned where this is heading?
This is probably the hardest question out of all of them because, number one, Rome is impossible for coaches to seem to get any sort of consistency, you know, because of the politics that's behind a lot of the club and everything else. Add to that, you've got Jose Mourinho, who is a tinderbox. It can go brilliantly well. They can take him to their heart. And if they do, then Roma and Mourinho could become a real force. It could all also become complete poison. Look, for me, that victory for Juve was impressive, but it also highlighted the mental fragility of Roma. Roma reminded me of Inter years ago. About 4 or 5 years ago, in that defeat, it was ridiculous. But they've got good players. I mean, you know, Tammy Abraham is actually starting to look decent and starting to score goals. You know, Rui Patricio, yes, he's got a mistake in him, but he's a decent goalkeeper. And all over the pitch, they look okay. I mean, obviously, Spinazzola, Pellegrini, you know, they've got players there that can influence. Zaniolo, when fully fit, is obviously brilliant. So the basics are there. Everything is there. And like you say, a good window, a Mourinho window, where you could maybe toughen that team up, and it does need toughening up, I think that's the key to it, is absolutely key. If he gets the players he wants and he can, then potentially Roma could have a good end to the season. Next game for me is absolutely key because you know as well as I do, David, that teams sometimes when they suffer such a psychological blow, it may not affect them just the next game, but in a high-pressure game, their minds will go back to that many, many times. So it's a big job for Mourinho to get them mentally ready for the rest of the season.
Yeah, for sure. I'm very curious to see what happens there. So I want to ask you this. A lot's been made about Insigne's move to Toronto. He's going to finish the season at Napoli. I haven't chatted with you about it. I have no idea what your feelings are on this. I'm just going to ask you a very general question. What do you make of Insigne leaving Napoli at the end of the season and heading to MLS?
Well, first of all, the positives for the MLS is that it shows that the type of player that they can bring here now is continuing to improve. It shows the levels that the MLS is up to. You know, the lure of Canada and Toronto and the Italian population there is obvious for Insigne. And, you know, he's probably going to have a very nice life there. And, you know, he'll enjoy the football. Probably spoke a lot to Giovinco and in the past about his time there. And I'm sure that makes sense in some ways. So credit to the MLS for that. However, it confuses me no end because I am not saying that the MLS should be somewhere where players go to retire. I'm not saying that at all, because you look at the way that they're stealing players from South America over the European clubs, and that's a credit to the MLS as well as a brand and what it is. But when you look at Insigne, I mean, look, Europe is the place, no matter wherever in the world, that people want to play. And Napoli are going to be in the Champions League. Insigne's just won the Euros. His stock is high. You know, he's not over the hill. And he's Neapolitan born and bred, and he loves the club. Okay, they may not be able to afford him. I don't know really all the details of the contract and what was offered. But realistically, I can understand Insigne moving, potentially. But I'm surprised he hasn't moved into Europe, because I can understand him not moving to another Serie A club because of his Neapolitan roots and how much he loves the club. But for me, he could play at the top level for another 2-3 years. And I think I've said to you on this podcast at another point, when Insigne is happy and Napoli are playing well, there isn't a player I like to watch more in this league than Insigne. So I'm confused by it, but I'm trying to process it and understand what his motives are. But yeah, I mean, look, credit to the MLS for getting him. But even if he moved to, what I'm trying to say is he could move to a top level club still, top level. Not just, you know, if he moved to a middle team, Premier League team, I'd be confused. He could still play at the top level. And that's why I wonder what his motives are.
Interesting. So let me ask you this question before we get to the English language pod. And be careful how you answer, since you do write for Fiorentina. In an ideal world, Vlahovic would stay there. He's been really sensational. So let me just ask you this. As someone who's followed him, knows mm-hmm. how great he is. If you could pick the next team, other than him signing a new contract with Fiorentina, of course, which team would you pick and why for him?
I think with Vlahovic, it's interesting because obviously Rocco Commisso is a tough nut. I've interviewed him before, even before I wrote Fiorentina, and he's definitely an interesting character because he's a no holds barred type of guy. And you know, look, they can keep hold of him to the end of the summer, and hopefully they'll qualify for Europe if they do so, and then they'll move him on for maybe a little bit of a better price because he'll have performed so well between now and the end of the season, even though his contract's running down. So selling now, you know, I can understand why they're holding on for that 80 million euros. I still think that's cheap for him, if I'm honest, in today's market with what you see players go for. For me, for Vlahovic, I know that when he's spoken, you know, he's looking at the likes of, you know, Real Madrid. He wants a top draw club, and I can understand that. And it would be interesting to see him maybe go to the likes of Real Madrid and for them to build a team around him, because I think he's capable of doing that, you know, of taking on that responsibility. But I like the Arsenal links. And it's just because I think that Arsenal under Arteta have got a very interesting squad, a young squad. And with the likes of Lacazette and Aubameyang looking like they're on the way out, for him to go in there, they obviously want him a lot. He might not want them, but I'd like to see Arsenal build a team around him. And with what they've got with the likes of Eddie Smith-Rowe, with Odegaard and some of the other players there, it could be one of the best young teams in Europe to develop. So for him, you know, it's a choice between going to one of the big established clubs and like Real Madrid, or someone like that, if they offer, or actually going to a club where he is, it's like big fish in a small pond. So yeah, I think that I would like to see that, because I wouldn't see him play. All I want to see is him playing week in, week out. But it's such a shame if he leaves Serie A.
I totally agree. So let's close on this, Richard. Like I said at the top, we've known each other for a while. You've been on the spot for over 4 years. Your journey has been awesome. So tell us a little bit about the Inter official podcast in English. It's really awesome that you are one of the hosts. So tell us a little bit about it. What can people expect when they tune in?
Yeah, I said about luck. I've very quickly been known the press guys from Inter since way back when, and done a lot of work with Inter, with interviewing players, like Perisic, Mancini, Bergamo, etc., for many, many years. And there's some filming out there with The Guardian. And so I've known, lucky enough to know some of the press guys. And when I was writing for Fiorentina, I asked Inter, the guys, you know, can I potentially write a couple of articles for your site? And they were sort of said, well, potentially, but we're not sure. And I thought, okay, you know, it's a, it'd be a dream for me or whatever, but it's it is what it is. And then they said, well, we've got a proposal for you. And I said, okay. And he said, well, you can write an article, but could it go alongside a podcast? And I was like, okay. And then God, probably because of radio, TV, or my own podcast that I've done, they'd heard that, and they asked me to host it, which was a shock for me, if I'm honest. And there's a guy who works in Inter's media department, a guy called Thomas Lawrence, who is brilliant, who is co-hosts it with me. And it's all down to him, really. And we get on like a house on fire. So we're good friends, and it's developed from there. So yeah, we're only on our third one, so bear with us. We're still finding our way. Inter have got a really good media department, especially in Italian, but they're not hitting the English language as much as they want to at the moment. So this is just one of the parts of it. So we're just trying to, you know, there's big Inter contingent in the UK and America and all around the world that are English speaking. So we're just trying to touch into that. So realistically, what we're doing is we're just, we're lucky enough to have a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit of access to the club where we can talk to a couple of players, past players, get a bit of insights, try and give people a bit of an idea what it's like at the club. I mean, I'm based in the UK, so I'm go out to Milan for this now and again, but a lot of time I'm in the UK, and Thomas is based purely in Milan, and so he's constantly in touch with the players. So we try and give a little bit of insight that's a little bit different, and just explain, you know, what the sort of, not the club's point of view, but what we think about what's going on in the club, and with a little bit of insight. So early days, bear with us, we're not quite sure it's you know, they're only 30 minutes, and we're trying to get them out before any major game or after any major game. But we are looking to try and get it on a much more regular basis. So, yeah, hopefully we can do that.
Well, it's in great hands with you involved. So, Richard, thank you so much for doing it. My dear friend, I'm very glad we did our first show of the year together. I look forward to doing many more. And in the meantime, keep up the awesome work.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. Thank you for having me on. And awesome show, as always. Thoroughly enjoy it. And we'll definitely speak soon.